Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
An Erio's original.
What they don't realize is that when you become your true self, the weight of that lifted off your shoulders is so huge that the alternative of being straight is not appealing to me, you know?
Well, I think it was partly my family, but I thought, well, I don't want to be pigeonholed into this Asian thing. So it was like, well, wait a second. I was trained as a classical actress. That's what I'm going to do.
It's taking over my dreams, waking me out of my sleep. I think I'm coming apart.
Hi, I'm Margaret Cho. Welcome to The Margaret Cho, where we talk to people you know and people you should know. Today, we talk to somebody you should know very well. She is great. Fortune Feimster is an old friend of mine and is so funny, and we got to catch up.
Yeah, I'm coming out of the dark. Oh.
Thanks for coming over.
Hey, Margaret, I'm so happy to be here.
I know.
Your house is cool.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I have to ask you about pool stuff. Now, have you been going in your pool since you got it? A lot?
Yes, I love it, having one. Mm-hmm. Only because in LA, it's warm.
So hot.
A lot of the times. And summer is so hot. Yeah.
Do you have pool parties?
Not really. Mm-hmm. We're bad at entertaining.
It's hard to.
Yeah.
I don't like to.
Our house is small. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we could certainly have people over, but we just kind of forget.
Yeah.
We're like, oh yeah, that's an option. We're adults and can invite people. I think because I've been on the road pretty nonstop for mm-hmm. like a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Then when we get home, we're just like, oh, the couch, our dogs, yeah. TV. Like we kind of like hermit.
I love that though, because you need that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think like when you're on the road as much as you are, which I get, like Sunday through Wednesday is totally sacred.
And you're exerting so much energy.
Right.
Through these, because, you know, I'm still at the club.
Oh, me too. I do everything. Yeah.
And so it's like 4 or 5 shows a weekend yep. and meet and greets at everyone.
Yeah.
So
it's a lot. And then also like the press stuff, you know, like mm-hmm. radio in the morning. It always like takes it out of me.
Yeah.
All day.
Yeah. You know? And so I just want to be... Sometimes I just want to be alone when I get home.
I agree. I understand. Like, it's just so... I get in this weird thing, like, on Sunday when I'm flying home, I make all these, like, crazy, like, plans, like, things I'm going to do when I get home. And then, like, you get home at, like, Sunday, it's, like, 8 o'clock, and then you're trying to do a million things. It's, like, really, like, why am I doing this?
I know. And then I'm trying to do local shows, too. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
The last thing I want to do is go do shows during the week.
It's hard.
Yeah.
But it also, what I like about doing local shows is that it gives you a place to work out comedy that isn't necessarily going to go on like a long set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it kind of gives you a chance to be more experimental.
Yeah.
And do things like new things and just see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get like hesitant to, like, I want to do sets where I'm just doing a bunch of new stuff, but mm-hmm. I chicken out sometimes.
Yeah.
And I start to sort of bookend it on my tour dates, so I'll be like, oh, I'm gonna add this like 10 minute new bit in the middle. But locally I'm like more hesitant to try for some reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know why.
There is also a lot of pressure in a way mm-hmm. because it's like everybody in town is, there's like this showcasing mentality mm-hmm. where everybody's constantly auditioning.
Yeah, I think that's totally what it is, where you just feel like, oh, they expect a certain thing, and I don't want to just get up there and suck. Yeah. But you know, then I see everybody up there with notebooks. I'm like, what am I doing?
That notebooks is so 90s.
Yeah.
It was almost like if in the 90s, if you were trying to do a set without a notebook, people were like, And in the 90s, it was kind of taboo to be funny.
Oh, how, that's so funny.
And prepared.
Yeah.
Like there was this weird thing when we were like sort of at the dawn of like alternative comedy or whatever mm-hmm. that is, there was like the divide of comedians. You were either an alternative comic or you were like a club comic.
Oh, interesting.
And a club comic meant you were like, oh, you were always on Evening at the Improv and you had that one act that you were going to do.
That late night set kind of thing.
Yeah, the late night 5 minutes. Like, or it was 4 minutes and like 40 seconds is a set because there would be like 1 minute and 20 seconds of laughter if you were really going for it. And so that was like the thing of like the divide between comics, like who was like legit and who was not. And the people that were legit are the people who had notebooks.
Oh, interesting.
And went off on like different tangents and didn't make any sense, which I like too.
Yeah, I've never taken a pad on stage. Mm-hmm. I should though. I see like Sarah Silverman still do it all the time.
Yeah.
She's always got a notebook with her.
Which is, I mean, you know, that's very much like our era, you know? And Sarah and I and like Janine Garofalo and like Kathy Griffin definitely would all have like notebooks and notebook like things. Like I like a Post-it.
Really?
Yeah. I like a Post-it. Yeah. It seems more disposable.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Uh-huh. He was like, got that idea done. Toss.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think it was like this thing of like, it kind of is the style of the era because the 90s, like the music was very raw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like grunge was really, and then everybody was like super thin.
Oh.
And then all our hair was really greasy.
Nice.
And we had no makeup except really dark lipstick, like really like red, like matte lipstick that would make your lips really like dry and chapped and weird.
I wonder where I would have fit in that scene.
Everywhere. Yeah, everywhere. You've been a good Riot Girl.
Yeah.
With like,
oh yeah.
Like really shredded denim shorts.
Yes. Some like plaid shirts.
Yeah.
The button ups that you don't button.
Right. Or like you had that tied around your waist with like what are those like long underwear shirts?
Yeah, long john shirts or whatever.
Yeah. So how old were you when the grunge was happening? Maybe like 2 or 3 years old.
No. God, what would that, what year would that?
That would have been 1991 until 1998, I think.
So
that would
11
have been.
To 18.
So yeah, pretty young. Well, then you could have sort of baby participated in the sort of the grunge thing.
But I think you kind of do what your older siblings are into. It feels like because I'm the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
And because anyone I talk to, they're like, yeah, my brother listened to grunge. So I was into it. My brother were listening to Run DMC and like the Fat Boys.
Oh, good.
And so that was like on our, we had a little jam box and every morning my brother would turn it on and that's what we listened to. So I didn't really listen to a lot of the grunge music.
Wow. Yeah.
Only because of that. My middle brother would listen to like Nirvana and stuff like that, but I missed out on the cool music.
Well, like, I wonder what the South was going through at that time. So the South was probably like, it was a little bit like trying to find their identity as well, I think, through that. So then you had kind of like sort of Black Crowes, which is to me is very Southern.
Yeah, for sure.
So they were more hippie.
Mm-hmm.
They were almost like a Grateful Dead kind of a jam band feel.
Yeah, for sure.
That's sort of what I think about. When I think about the South, I think about, the Black Crowes. Mm-hmm. Their songs are real long.
Yeah. Yeah, and then because it takes things a little bit longer to get to us, back then at least, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as like, whatever was cool on the West Coast, we were not hip to it yet.
Were you really a debutante?
I was a debutante.
I love that. I love that.
It was because my mom was one and my grandmother was one.
Yeah, it's a legacy.
It's a very traditional thing in the South. And by the time I turned, I think they, appoint you one when you're 17.
Yeah.
And then you're coming out to society as an 18. It's like around Christmas of your freshman year of college. It was funny because my family used to be fairly well connected and had money, But then through a series of bad decisions, my grandfather dying unexpectedly, people mismanaging, my mom married my dad who had no money. Mm-hmm. By the time I got to high school, we were broke. Mm-hmm. But still had the legacy of this family that had been well connected at one point. Mm-hmm. So I just remember being like, I'm not doing this. We have no money.
Yeah.
And you have to pay. They make you go to like parties, like etiquette. It really was etiquette parties or parties where like luncheons where there's like little sandwiches and you had to wear like a dress or something nice to every party. Mm-hmm. I didn't own any dress. And I was like, I am not doing this. And my mom was still wanting to relive her glory days of when her family was doing well. And we didn't want to face reality. She didn't. So I kind of did it for her.
Yeah.
And somehow she scraped the money. We were having like our light shut off. Ooh. And then here she was coming home with like a pink dress for a luncheon. I'm like, this is the most bizarre Southern sweep things under the rug thing I've ever experienced.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that certainly it's dying a lot. Like I don't see a lot of, I mean, maybe there seems to be maybe a slight revival because of like maybe social media, like Instagram, uh-huh. that sort of thing where you want to document something like that. Yeah. I'm sure there's like Instagram like influencers who would love to have like a whole debutante experience.
Yeah. Your whole like coming out ball or whatever is like they make you wear these really long white, kind of like a wedding gown.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes it's your brother or your dad is like your escort or something. They're like, it made my mom so happy. She was like on top of the world that it was the only time she was ever going to see me in a white wedding gown. That's mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I have now come out twice.
The whole like coming out thing, like if you're from a community like that, is mm-hmm. it harder to come out in that, you know, like
I would say yes. And mm-hmm. part and I but I didn't come out till I moved to LA, probably mm-hmm. because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I came out at 25, which seems so old now. I can't believe that because, you know, you can look back and be like, oh, I was gay all along. I didn't know it. You know, I'm sure other people knew it,
mm-hmm.
but it's kind of one of those things where you know, we've all seen someone in our lifetime where we're like, oh, that person's gay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they're like, no, I like, you know, and you're like, wait, you what? Huh? And so people kind of know this thing about you before you know it.
Right.
Or at least that used to be more common.
Yeah.
Back, you know.
Well, people, in the day. I have dyke face, so I can't escape it. People uh-huh. just assume.
Really?
Because I have dyke face. And I think, you know,
I have dyke shoulders.
Yeah, it's like there's like characteristics that people kind of make those assumptions about.
Yeah.
But I think for me coming out was harder because being bisexual, like, my family didn't understand.
Yeah.
They still don't get it.
Right.
They were really hard. They're fine with gay, but bi is like super weird to them.
Yeah. They're just like, I'm sure, that, you know, the people are like, pick a side, you know?
Yeah.
They seem to be like that, right?
Or like, did you change your mind? Or uh-huh. like, oh, well, you're going to change your mind.
Or like it was a phase or something. Yeah. It's, you know, it takes people a while to sort of come to terms with it. I mean, I remember my family was pretty great about it,
mm-hmm.
and I was lucky in that sense. So I never experienced what it was like to be out in the South and living there. I'm sure that's a whole different ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
I was living here, and, you know, at first my brothers were like, yeah, of course. We've known forever. And you're like, cool. And my dad was just like, I love you no matter what. Yeah. I think my mom, it was more like her idea of what my life was going to look like changed mm-hmm. in a matter of seconds where she was like, oh, I don't know what this, I can't envision this because what I've visioned my whole life for you is changing mm-hmm. within seconds. And, you know, she was worried, I think, that my life was going to be harder for me than it had to be.
Like, right.
To be straight is probably easier in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're just accepted. So in her mind, it was like, oh, she's going to struggle now.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't realize is that when you become your true self, it is like the weight of that lifted off your shoulders is so huge
right.
that the alternative of being straight is not appealing to me. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And so once she like kind of came to terms with that, she's like such a huge gay supporter now, and yeah. is like president of my hometown's PFLAG.
Oh, that's
and
awesome!
Stuff like that. So
that's
I'm very
really
lucky.
Great. I think that's really great. I mean, but isn't she like so thrilled about your upcoming nuptials, your upcoming
yeah.
wedding?
Well, you know, like any Southern mother,
yeah,
she's very protective of me, mm-hmm. and my parents split when I was 12. So I sort of became my mom's like plus one mm-hmm. in life. Mm-hmm. And so I had not had a serious relationship before Jax. I dated a lot, but nothing real serious. Mm-hmm. So my mom always, I got to continue to be her plus one or her mine mm-hmm. throughout, you know, till my 30s.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're like, well, this is my partner who I'm probably gonna marry, and you know, I think at first the Southern mother of like, that's my baby is oh. like, ah! uh-huh. what, you know, they feel like they're gonna be replaced or something.
Yeah,
I mean, she's never cop to that, mm-hmm. but I think in the beginning there was a sort of like, where does that leave me now mm-hmm. in my life? Yeah. But she quickly realized there's no one or the other. It is, you're my mom, this is my partner, we're all good.
Yeah.
And so now she's, it's great, and she's very excited that I found someone, and that mm-hmm. it's good, and we're happy, and it's a journey. It's also one thing to like be gay and tell your mom that you're gay, and it's another thing for them to see you holding hands, kiss, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If when you're 3,000 miles away, she's like, yeah, my daughter's gay, but she's not seeing me with a partner on a yeah. regular basis. She's not seeing me kiss or hold hands, mm-hmm. and then you're kind of faced like, oh yeah, that's what that means, being gay.
Yeah,
yeah,
the realness. Mm-hmm. And then she'll see you being very realness on the L word.
I know. Well, I don't think I'll ever be smooching anyone on the L word.
Why not? You should.
Don't Jax will be like, oh my god, no.
Oh, would she not like it?
I don't. I mean, she's never. That's never come up. No one's yeah. ever had me do that on anything. So. As of right now, my character is a silly warm-up comedian, very like kind of awkward. Whether or not my character will experience anything in that way, I don't know.
Is it like, what show is it? Is yeah, it a daytime talk
like
show?
A show within a show.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and
I love it.
So yeah, I just have to be silly. And,
that's a fun character.
Yeah, so
we have to wear a bow tie.
I know.
And a really oversized blazer.
I know. I should tell them, but bringing the bow ties. I've only filmed, they just shot the pilot mm-hmm. this last, a couple weeks ago. I was just on there a couple days. I think it's a short season. It's only 8 episodes. Mm-hmm. And I think I'll be in like maybe 3. So I don't think my character will have some big arc. I think I will be some levity.
I think those episodes too, like they'll be watched over and over and over again because mm-hmm. we have to like really consume it every which way. When yeah. Because it's such an iconic
it is,
show.
And I didn't, I mean, I of course watched it, you know, mm-hmm. but the irony is that I wasn't even out yet when it premiered.
Mm-hmm.
I came out late because it premiered in 2003. I came out in 2005.
Yeah.
But it was a significant part of my journey in that when all of that was bubbling up for me, I watched that first season and it was like, holy cow. It blew my mind because
yeah.
I really hadn't seen anything like it with women.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it made me be like, oh, that's a world that I think I'm supposed to be. I mean, not the crazy drama, but just them getting coffee and talking
yeah.
about dates. I was like,
it's incredible.
World I think I'm supposed to be in.
Except they all wore like really white pants, which I'm like, I'm not going to wear a white pants. I mean, I'm not going to wear white pants like that. No way.
Yeah.
I would always either sit on something or get my period in it. There's like no way.
They were very
wear-
bold.
They wore like really white pants. It was really Santa Monica. Everything
yeah.
was like really by the ocean.
Right. Yeah.
And and then after Dana died, I kind of couldn't go back.
That was a tough one. That her dying, I think. I'm curious. I haven't asked any of them if anyone that creatively regretted that decision. So I feel like that maybe people didn't realize what a beloved character that was until.
I think it was important for it to happen because we need to learn how to process death.
Right.
But it was also a very like lesbian reaction to be like, I don't accept this.
Right. I refuse.
You know, I refuse to accept this and
people
I'm not going.
Still are like, is she coming back?
Yeah.
I'm like, that's impossible.
I know. Like, well, the actress is alive, so feasibly yes. she could. I mean, you know, it's like if
you could.
Characters come back to life in like soap operas.
That's true.
Well, or telenovelas.
I mean, Roseanne's not the best example right now, but you know, John Goodman's character.
Oh, right. Died. He was revived.
Yeah, he was revived. So anything in Fresh Prince, the mom completely changed midway through yeah. one of the seasons.
You could accept yeah. it. I think it's like, yeah, it's that's one of the things that I really had a problem with, like yeah. her dying and like being mad about it. Yeah. Like, I'm still mad.
I know. I think a lot of people are.
I need to get over it. I mean, I'm going to watch the show, of course, and I'm yeah. really excited about it.
Well, I'm very curious to see how it all unfolds because it is... sort of two things happening in the show in that Jennifer Beals' character, Lisha Haley's, and Kate Moaning, their three characters are back.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a new, younger generation. And mm-hmm. the stories all sort of intertwine. You'll have to service these new characters as well as the ones coming back. And I'm curious to see, like, will these fanatical fans accept the... new part of the show.
I think as long as like Shane's there, everything's gonna yeah, be fine.
Shane is there.
Shane is like yeah, gonna smooth it all over.
Yeah. So know? They're definitely combining two worlds of a younger generation and an older generation together.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely, it's cool. I mean, I was on set just like kind of fangirling myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's really if these vaginal walls could talk. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you got a fangirl, but they're incredible.
Yeah. And I like Jennifer Beals was like so nice. And I didn't want to pretend like I had never watched a show or wasn't a fan. I was like, I love the show. This is so exciting.
I love it. Yeah.
And she was like, that's so great. And then, like, the next day, Jennifer was taking photographs in the makeup trailer, and I was like, oh, you take photographs? And because she had, like, the real camera and mm-hmm. everything, and she's like, yeah, I did this thing. When they did the original, she photographed tons of stuff, and the actresses and behind the scenes, and she kept all these mementos, and she made this, like, book for fans
mm-hmm.
that had all these photographs, and... later that afternoon, she's like, I have something for you. And she, like, handed me one of those books. Aww. And I was like, that is so sweet.
That's so nice.
So it's a lovely set. And it's cool, too, because so many people working on the show, on the crew, writers, are gay or diverse.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of women.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And you don't see a lot of that on set.
No, and I think that's one of the great things about it. I always think, like, when we were, like, watching those scenes, I wonder if they went all the way and, like, had, like, dildo harnesses under the bed with, like, their, like, vibrators. And I was like, I wonder which one they have.
Yeah.
You know, like, who does what? Who likes what?
There is I won't give it away, but there's a scene that when I read for the pilot, I was like, whoa, they went there. So I'm excited. That's for good. People to see it.
It yeah. gets very racy. I mean, even the original series would get very racy.
Yeah.
With the sex scenes. And I'm like, that's great.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
They don't hold back.
They shouldn't. They shouldn't. Yeah, well, I can't wait to see you
so
there.
Get ready.
You know what I love? Two things I wanted to bring up with you today. One is I love when you put on a wig and then you start talking about Tim.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this is a character. I think it's anytime your hair is kind of straight.
Yeah.
That you become kind of straight.
I channel those ladies that I grew up with. Those yeah. straight ladies.
Who are always talking about how he's going to get a present when he gets home.
Yeah.
Tim.
So I was shooting this thing, I don't know, like last year. And they put me in this, I was playing a straight woman. They put me in this ridiculous outfit. And it had like a lot of turquoise necklaces mm-hmm. and a denim vest.
Yeah.
And I was sitting around all afternoon, like bored out of my mind. Because, you know, you just sit around and wait all the time. And I just started talking, like pretending I was some southern woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started going, Tim, to like getting, you know, pretend mad at my husband, Tim. And I posted all these videos throughout the day of me pretending to be this lady. And then like every post from then on, where's Brenda? I was like, because I was just like made up Tim. These names, you know. Where is she? And I'm like, well, I was just messing around. And then all of a sudden, people were like demanding more videos. Yeah. So now every like, I don't know, month or so, I'll put out a couple of videos where I pretend to be this Southern woman.
I always think she probably has an Etsy store where she makes like personalized like doormats.
Yeah.
Like, don't come in unless you have wine.
For sure. All those cheesy sayings. But what's so funny is that when I did that character originally, my hair was straight for the role I was doing. Mm-hmm. Well, it takes a lot of time to straighten my hair, and I had crazy makeup on. So I've had different versions of Brenda where mm-hmm. I've like had a wig on, or like this weekend I had my it was just me doing a Southern accent.
You just do it, and it's all about Tim. But how he's gonna get it when he gets home, and sexually.
Yeah, he's gonna get a BJ.
Yeah, because is that what it is? I think it's a BJ because
she gets real mad at him, mm-hmm. and because he never helps around the house, mm-hmm. and then he buys her turquoise. And she's like, oh my God, y'all, Tim got me some turquoise. You know what that means. And everyone will write, BJ. I'm like, I am going to give him a BJ. Yeah. I sure am.
And he's going to have like frosted pink lipstick all over his balls.
So
like really frosty.
100%. So they like that she's a little firecracker.
I do too.
But people were like, we want to meet Tim. I'm like, no, you're never going to meet Tim.
No, he's.
Yeah. I don't think you should.
No, you shouldn't.
You know, but people have sent me like one fan saw a truck with the wolves, you know, wrapped on the windows.
Yeah.
He's like, and it said Tim on the license. And he goes, I just found Tim. And I posted, it made me laugh so hard because I'm like, yes, that's the exact truck
that's Tim
would drive. And I love that people are helping create this world.
I know.
Non-existent.
But they see them around. I'm picturing either like Tim McGraw or Tim Allen. I think it's more Tim McGraw.
More good old boy.
Yeah, more country.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Drinks beer a lot with his buddies and Brenda's trying to, you know, take care of everybody in the house and kids. She's always exasperated. So it's fun for me to just
I love it.
Do so. It's also nice just to like so many of my characters are gay or, you know, a version of myself. Mm-hmm. It's fun to just be a whole different.
Like, it is. It's like, really
I
funny.
I could be a straight lady from the South.
Well, what, yeah, of course. Know? And I love all the characters that I've seen you play over the years. And
oh, thank you.
It's really fun. And I always love Honey Boo Boo. That Alana is really a good one.
Yes. I did that on Chelsea Lately when that Honey Boo Boo show was at its height.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like the first ones to parody it.
So great.
Back then, the Honey Boo Boo family did not care for it.
Oh.
I also played the mother.
Yeah.
I think that's the one they didn't care for.
So funny. Because
I put like the big fake neck on. So they wouldn't come on the show because they didn't like
no.
it. But the Honey Boo Boo ones itself was just fun.
It's really
just
cute.
I even went out. Miley Cyrus was on stage and she was obsessed with that show, so they had me dress like Honey Boo Boo for her. And but then like cut to like a year ago, I run into someone working with Alana, and she was like, Alana's, you know, doing Dancing with the Stars Junior or whatever it's called, would you mentor her? And I'm like, I wish her the best of luck, but I don't think it's right for me to have gone from parroting that to being like, here's how to do great in life. You know, I thought that was a little too hypocritical. So I was just like, there's so many great people to mentor her, but I don't, you know, I don't want to be that person. And she's doing great. It seems like,
but, you're doing great. The other thing that I wanted to mention is the body roll dancing. Is that the ice cream dance?
Ice cream dance.
I really love the dance because it's not just the dance. It sort of starts with your face because it's like the pleasure.
Yes. Listen, Margaret, these are all the things I'm doing just to get people to follow me on social media, which you hope that then it turns into them buying tickets to a comedy show.
Which they do.
Yeah. It's like that constant trying to figure out how to entertain people on every medium is like a constant, like, oh, what now?
But the ice cream dance is like, it's the pleasure in your face that starts off, and then it's just the body roll, which I love.
Yeah, so that started a couple of years ago. I was at Disneyland and it was so hot. I was there with my friends, Jillian Bell. She's an actress.
Ooh.
And it was so hot. I got ice cream, and the Disney parade was coming by as I was eating my ice cream, and they were sitting down, and I guess I was loving this ice cream so much, and the music from the parade was playing. I started dancing with my ice cream, and they secretly filmed me and they sent it to me, and I go, oh my god, that's so funny. I was legit really loving that ice cream, and so I posted it. And again, people were like, well, more of this please,
we need that.
So then every city I would go on tour, I would try out an ice cream place and film a dance. And I was running out of moves, and I've found that holding an ice cream cone, it's hard to like really dance, so it evolved into lots of body rolls.
Yeah, the body rolls, because you can keep the ice cream kind of static.
Yeah, a lot of turns. Still,
yeah.
Body rolls. It's kind of my signature move.
I love it.
If I had my hands free, the moves that you guys would see.
You could do a lot more.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I think the constraints make you creative in this different way.
Yeah, and you show the joy in your face of having this delicious ice cream. The pleasure.
I love it too.
Yeah, at the end of the day, unless you have a lactose intolerance, who doesn't love ice cream?
Well, they could probably do Rice Dream.
There's a lot of great dairy-free options now.
Absolutely, or do a sherbet.
Yeah.
You know? You don't have to deny.
I love a sherbet.
Yeah. It's delicious.
I'll do a sherbet dance.
You know, people should look at all your socials and go to your shows. Where are you at?
I am on Instagram at Fortune Feimster, and I'm on tours. So all those dates are at my website, fortunefeimster.com. I'm in tons of cities because I'm filming a special at the end of September. So awesome. I'm on the road, Portland, Salt Lake City, Indianapolis, Madison, all those places.
Yeah. I love it. Well, people should go see you.
Yes.
So funny.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Such a pleasure talking with you.
I know. You're awesome. Thank
you. Too.
Thanks. My next guest is Jody Long, who is an actress and somebody who I know very well from All American Girl, and she's actually running for office in the SAG-AFTRA whole election. She is great, and we'll hear from her after the break.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for coming over.
You're welcome.
And because you're running your campaign right now, it's like a very big deal. You haven't run for this before, so this is all new.
This is all new. Mm-hmm. I ran for like vice president in junior high school.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should tell them what I'm running for, right? I'm running for national secretary treasurer of SAG-AFTRA.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running alongside of Matthew Modine, who's running for president.
Yeah, he's great.
He's really great.
He's awesome.
And, you know, being on the board, I just ran because my girlfriend was like, you've got to run with us. And then I got 4 years on the national board. Mm-hmm. I was like, how did that happen? And seeing the climate within the boardrooms, it's so hard and divisive. And I really was inspired by Matthew because he was like, wait a second, we're all like in this together.
Yeah.
We're performers, we're artists.
Mm-hmm.
And can we change the culture in this boardroom?
Mm-hmm.
He really had the right vision and the right temperament to do this. You know, you can't have somebody who's like crazy running their mouth off all the time,
well,
right?
Yeah.
You have to have not only a diplomat, but somebody who actually has vision. So he was running, and then someone was going to run with him. She ended up not being able to run. And then I thought, well, I really want him to win.
Yeah.
And so, Matthew, I'm with you. I'm here. You want me to do this with you? I'm for you.
I love it.
And he was like, Yeah. Okay, let's do it. Yeah.
It's cool. I mean, you know, this is important for us as actors. You know, we need our representatives there, you know, this union. It is a big deal. It's a really big deal.
Well, it's a big deal because I feel like there's so many things that have been given away, mm-hmm. like our residuals.
Yeah.
Maybe not given away so much as not kept pace with the changing times.
Right.
And that, you know, for the big stars, they don't really care because
don't feel it, but we all feel it because we're really what make up most of the industry is people that, you know, we make a living wage off of this job and we have for many years, and it's people don't really understand like how much less show business is really about like what the big stars do, and it's about, you know, everybody else.
Exactly.
You know, making up every other part of the industry, other part of, like, you know, it's not just the above the name stars and everything.
That's right. And you know, we're all in it together. Mm-hmm. And you know, now we're also a union of stunt performers and background performers and broadcasters and dancers and singers and recording artists. So we have to think more broadly,
yeah,
and cover more people.
Exactly.
So it just has an air of inclusiveness. And I think what happens is that the categories that don't bring in as much money, like the principal performer, big stars, mm-hmm. at least recently, they haven't been as considered. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's something we would really like to change.
Yeah.
And we have some ideas about that. So it's just bringing people in a heart thing. And Matthew is actually such a heart guy.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what we're really about and trying to do.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's great.
It is good.
Since we're in this union, do we all get to go to a home? Because you see that sometimes where they have like the actors' home.
They do. I think it's called the Actors Fund Home.
Yeah. Do we all get to go there, or is it just?
Yeah. I mean, I think you still have to sign up.
You have to sign up to go.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm ready. I need help. But I mean, it's like, I always wonder like when we get to go to that home, because it's all like old actors there. How fun.
It could be.
It could be.
As everyone's singing up and down the halls.
I mean, yeah. And like, you know, and you would see all of like the different day players, like all the guest stars. Yeah. From all of the different years of the different shows that you've been on. So you would like, I love the finality of that.
You already feel like you know them, right?
Yeah, you already feel like you know everybody. You probably like guest starred with them at something, on something, like we were on T.A. Day Hooker together.
Exactly.
And we day played on this, we day played on that or whatever. And then you would get to hang out with all the, you know, old actors. I think that's fun.
There's one in New Jersey too, you know. Oh,
you don't really
have to just stay in L.A.
So the one in New Jersey, does that sort of service like the Broadway, all of the...
Well, I think it really depends on where people live. So mm-hmm. I know a friend of mine's mother was also in the industry, mm-hmm. and she put her in there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so it was close to her because she also lived in New Jersey. So
oh, that's great.
I was like, oh, yeah, this sounds good. You know, they can get to go to the Jersey Shore too.
Yeah. And then it would be everybody that was like in all of like those like the Godfathers.
Yeah, exactly.
Movies. And then all, yeah, like anybody who's sort of in all this, there's like 70s noir films would be like in there.
Exactly.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. And then I think the one out here is in Toluca Lake or somewhere out in West Hills. I don't know.
I think Toluca Lake is kind of really made up of like old show people. Well, that's like where Bob Hope was.
Was he?
I think Phyllis Diller was there too.
Oh, wow.
So I think that, I mean, that's sort of like all also around like the Sportsman's Lodge, like
yes,
the Coldwater Canyon area.
That's right.
I do think that there's quite a lot of old actors. I've seen Robert Blake around there.
Oh, yeah.
I get scared.
Yeah, me too.
I get really scared. But it's like you do see these people around, and I'm like, God, I guess we should all be going to like, should be sort of like an old show people home.
You're not that old, honey.
No. But well, I'm 50. Oh. That's pretty well. It's old as I've been, but it's not that old. But it's also it's pretty ancient in like Hollywood years, I think. Right? I don't know.
I guess. I mean, if you saw a car that was 50 years old, you'd think it was an old car, right?
It's a classic, yeah.
Classic. There you go.
Classic. Like,
we're classics now,
Margaret. We're classics. But yeah, you always look like 25 to me.
Oh, come on.
Which is so weird. So weird to like, you know, now I think we kind of maybe, you know, because you played my mother and my aunt in two different productions.
Your aunt?
Well, weren't you my aunt in Steve's show?
Oh, yeah, right.
So, yeah, or are we cousins?
I don't. No, I was your aunt.
You're my aunt. Yeah. So, yeah, you're my aunt in that show, and then you're Steve's mom, and then you're my mom, but we're all kind of in the same age group, so I don't know how that happened.
I'm not, actually. I'm a lot older, and I'm going to say, oh,
you're so young. No, it's like, yeah, we're all, we really missed you at the 25-year anniversary. And we really wish you were there, but we had a good time. So we showed an episode of All American Girl at...
which one?
It was the one where Grandma has a boyfriend. It's the... So she...
I guess I wasn't in that one very much.
No, you're in it a lot. Everybody's in it. And then you should have seen BD's suit is really baggy. Because it was the 90s. So everybody, all the men had really, really baggy. It was shocking to me how baggy it was. And then he had like really long, like a bob.
His hair.
The hair was really long. And I kind of, when I watched it again with everybody, I was like, I want Grandma to leave. Like she's going to have like this boyfriend who wants her to go and live in Florida with him. And then she couldn't leave because she wanted to be with the family. And I'm like, you know what? That's wrong. You should just go.
Yeah, you should go. Did you tell her that in the show?
Well, I told her to go in the show. And then at the end of the show, I took it back. I'm like, no, I can't. You have to stay. And then I realized that what a selfish person. I should have let her go.
Yeah.
You know, because she's having this like affair.
Talk to those writers.
I need to talk to somebody. Yeah, it was nice to come and sit down with an audience and actually watch it. You know, I don't know if there's any other show in the history of television that had only one season that is talked about as much as our show.
It's really true.
Yeah. Because it was the first really time true. People saw Asian Americans on TV.
That's right.
You know, so that's very right. significant.
It was. Did you feel it held up, not having seen it for so long?
Yeah, it held up. I can't remember the last time I had no lines on my neck. I'm like, I have no lines on my neck and it's not CGI. And I was like, this is weird. Did they alter this? Because I have no lines on my neck. I didn't recognize myself.
What is it with those lines? I got them too. And I'm like, oh my God.
We look great though.
Get rid of this.
I know it's weird, but they can't. It's weird. But I think it's an Asian thing. But because the face looks great.
Too. Yeah, I think it's an Asian thing.
The face looks so great.
All the wrinkles just fall down.
So it's like the neck is kind of like the Dorian Gray's portrait.
Exactly.
But it's real close. It's not in your basement. It's right on, you know, on your neck. Yeah, we look great in the show, though. If you watch it, now, you're like, oh my God.
I was so young.
So good. We all look great. You know, it definitely held up. I think like some of it is, it's just wistful because like, oh, well, this could have really been a show that people would have grown up with, you know, like, I don't know why we weren't able to continue. I mean, there certainly were some reasons then, I guess, but it's sad. But people really do people come up to you and talk to you about it?
They don't really recognize me mm-hmm. because I don't really look like I looked like on the show.
You had a big
white streak, right?
Yeah, it was very Cruella de Vil.
Yeah, it was.
It's perfect.
It was.
It's shiny, kind of bouffant. Like you must have had to go, like your character probably had to go get it done.
Oh, absolutely. But you know? I was, you know, in that makeup chair and they had to spray that happy hair on me afterwards just to get all the teasing out.
Oh, I know. I actually had to cut my hair after the year because it was so teased.
Oh, like really?
That
it was breaking. It
was all breaking. And the teasing of the hair in the 90s, you know, we talk about the 60s bouffants, but the 90s bouffants were really something.
Yeah, they were.
And they had to tease our hair. And it was really crazy. But I do remember like, we were like so manicured and, you know, it really shows on the screen. You really see it.
Do you remember, I think the first couple episodes, I don't know if you know, but I used to wrap a towel around me to look like I had two kids.
Oh gosh, really? Oh wow.
Three kids. I had three kids.
Yeah, you had three kids.
I had three kids. So I used to, because I was so thin.
Yeah.
I used to wrap this towel around.
Yeah.
Wear these big moo moo.
Yeah. Also, you were so young too. And then with Clyde, who played my father and your husband, like I've done a couple of things with him. He's played my father. He's played my husband also, which is super weird.
That's weird.
It's weird. But,
very,
you know,
incestuous.
Every relationship happens with Asian American actors. With BD, I played his sister, of course, and then I played his fiance. And then I played, we're like full on married in one thing. And one time we had to kiss. He asked me, one movie we had to kiss, and he asked me to marry him at a swimming pool. And we had to kiss, and we were both trying to smash our faces into the camera so we have more of our face in the camera when we're kissing. So we just like smashed our cheeks together because we both wanted the FaceTime. It's really funny, but you know, it's a really great project to work on together. And do you see anybody ever?
I see, who do I see? I see Clyde because he's also active in the union.
Right.
And I see Amy at different events because, you know, I do a lot of work down at Visual Communications. And I think that's it. I just saw Maddie Corman. Did they ever show that of us saying, hi, we love
yes.
you? Yes. Okay, good.
Thank you.
For the 25th anniversary.
Yes.
That we missed. So I went to see Maddie's one-woman show. And it was quite heart-rending.
Yes.
And hard. What a hard time for her, but a wonderful show.
Yes.
And did you see it?
Accidentally Brave.
Accidentally Brave. No, I haven't.
Is it still, what, is she still performing it still?
I think they just closed.
She's awesome. Think.
Yeah, she
She's
really
so
is.
She's so great. But yeah, I didn't have a chance to see it. I really wanted to see it. And I know that you have a one-woman show also.
That I do. I just finished that. That's why I couldn't come to the 25th anniversary because I got terribly sick and doing all the shows. And anyway, and it was only, I didn't get sick because I'm a sick person. It was my director has a two-year-old.
Oh.
And he got sick.
Oh,
his partner
yeah.
got sick. And then because the kid was sick. And then there I was.
Yeah.
Also sick. So, but anyway, the show is called Surfing DNA. And we did really well.
That's great.
I did a version of it about 10 years ago. And now it's a different version, actually. And really, you know, as I've evolved, my life has evolved, and the show has evolved. And now I sing and I tap dance, you know, because my parents were vaudevillians. So we do a little bit of the vaudeville stuff in the beginning.
Oh, I love it.
And then we morph into the deeper parts of the DNA, you know, show business is part of the DNA. But
yeah.
So I'm looking forward to bringing it to New York. I've got some people
it.
Interested.
Oh, I want
to
see it.
Yeah, I think you'll like it.
I'm sure I will love it.
I think you'll like it.
That's really
it's
cool.
It's fun.
I love it. So you're like, I think one of the first like biracial people that I've ever met, I think.
Really?
I think, well, with Asian Americans, there's a weird xenophobia that we have with each other.
Yes.
At least like for my family, you know, was always like they were just so like devoted to being Korean. Like they were so Korean. And then they tested our DNA. They did like a whole 23andMe thing. And we're actually Chinese.
Well, yeah.
We discovered. We're all Chinese, actually.
Yeah. Pretty much.
So it's that thing of like, there's no reason to be this kind of like xenophobic or insular about ourselves.
Yeah. My dad was, you're talking about mixed race. I didn't really know it. I sort of vaguely knew it when I was growing up because he's Australian. So he's Chinese and Scottish. And my mother is all Japanese American. She was born here. And so, you know, my father's family, after World War II, the Chinese hated the Japanese because of the Nanjing Massacre, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they were like, oh my God, you married a Japanese woman, even though she's an American.
Right.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
So, I kind of grew up with that. And my mother's parents, they didn't really speak English. You know, they were from Japan.
Yeah.
And, you know, she and they were put in an internment camp here.
Mm.
So in part, my show is... my mother's part of my mother's story is in there and kind of echoing what's going on now at the border.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and the show starts with no one invited you into this business. You invited yourself, which is a quote by Eddie Foy, you know, which is the main guy from vaudeville.
Yes.
Right. So
yes.
He's talking about no one invited you into this business.
Right.
And
right.
They definitely invited people that look like you or me.
No.
And the second half of the second act starts with no one invited you into this country. You invited yourself.
Right.
So it's then it reflects all the different DNA through my family.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
But it's like that thing of like, yeah, nobody did invite us, but we decided to be in it anyway.
That's correct.
And then, so then you have been doing TV and movies and theater and all of this stuff for, you know, a long
time. Too long.
We've been doing it for a long time. And, you know, when you first came in, like, what kind of projects were you looking at? Like, I was like, we really wanted to get a job on Nash Bridges. I really wanted to get I need to get a guest star in my Nash Bridges. And that, you know, there was like
Kelly Who. That was Kelly.
Kelly Who. Yeah. Kelly's great.
Yeah.
But you know, there was very little parts. I would always That's go up right. against Kelly Who for something. I love Kelly. Kelly and I were in a movie together, gosh, probably maybe 91 or 92 called Fake in the Funk. In it was
Good
about
name.
It's about a Chinese exchange student who gets relocated to South Central. So she's like writing in a low rider. Yeah.
Wow.
It's like being like this Chinese exchange student in like very 90s, early 90s South Central LA.
Wow.
So it's a comedy. It was actually a lot of fun to do. But, you know, the parts were like very few and far between for me. Like, what, you know, what were you going out for? Like, what kind of stuff? Like, I went out for Wayne's World, I think.
I never got up to
you
that.
You didn't go
I never got up for that. I don't know why. I wasn't in LA then.
Mm-hmm.
I was mostly doing theater in New York.
Oh, yeah, theater in New York, which is actually better probably because you're getting more prospects in a sense, theater.
Well, I did. I did a lot of non-traditional, what they called non-traditional casting in those days,
mm-hmm.
Colorblind casting. And I was really because I wanted to do all the great parts. I mean, I went anywhere from playing Cherie in Bus Stop mm-hmm. to playing Helena in Midsummer Night's Dream to Tooth of Crime, Sam Shepard. So I was doing so many different kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But that was only through my sheer determination and chutzpah, really.
Yeah, it takes lot of determination to, you know, get out there. And especially when you're not feeling like you're represented, you know, anywhere. So it's like, where did that courage come from? Just like you just wanted to do it.
Well, I think it was partly my family, but I thought, well, I don't want to be pigeonholed into this Asian thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm tall. I don't speak any language other than English and French, mm-hmm. you know. So it was like, well, wait a second. I was trained as a classical actress. That's what I'm going to do. Coming out to Hollywood, you know, at whatever year that was in 91, because I was doing a play at the Taper, it was hard because they would see me for newscasters, newscasters, and newscasters.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, really, I played so many of those in movies.
Yes.
And then there was a point where I was just playing Korean mothers.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's good.
That started with All American
Girl. That's good.
And ended with Steve Byrne.
Yeah, I love it. I love that show. You know, I love you and Steve, and I love that show because it was such a... It was actually kind of like a very classic multicam.
It was.
With the bar and Brian Doyle Murray and
Christine
his friends.
Ebersole.
And Christine Ebersole. And like...
Roy Wood Jr.
I love that. Like, I love that the old school, like, you know, kind of like Sanford and Son, kind of like that kind of
Cheers.
A family comedy. Cheers. And, you know, there was something very like cool and like retro about it that was really funny. And, you know, of course, he's so funny. You guys were all so great. But I wish that show had continued. And it was almost right before we had this kind of big surge of like Asian American in the entertainment world awareness.
Well, we got canceled, I think, just as Fresh Off the Boat came in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in part, the producers didn't build up the fact that we were a multiracial cast.
Mm.
They mostly focused on the guys
mm-hmm.
and that it was a Cheers kind of thing.
Yeah.
But we were the most diverse cast on TV at that point.
Absolutely.
Not just racially, but age-wise.
Yeah, definitely.
Everything. Rob Long, who came from Cheers,
mm-hmm.
He's a genius.
Yeah.
You know, he does the martini shot on KCRW.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And he's a really funny guy. So it just, I think we were just slightly ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really too bad. And I think for Steve, being mixed race, you know, because his mom is Korean and his dad is Irish. And I think it's hard for him because he's like, you know, the Asian community doesn't like... They don't embrace me. I feel kind of out on the outside of it. I'm like, really?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard to figure out like where you are supposed to be like racially, you know, like trying to figure out like where we are like racially and in terms of this business. And I think like now I definitely see more stuff happening, but not enough still. Like, it's like we had this big thing of like, okay, Fresh Off the Boat is on the air and now we have Crazy Rich Asians. Everything's going to change. And, you know, The Farewell just came out, which is great.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's a beautiful movie. And I actually, when I watched it, I really cried from beginning to end because there was such a recognition of something kind of ancient. Like, this is really, they're kind. I'm like, oh, this is what white people must feel like. I'm like, oh, I get it. This is what white people must feel like at Christmas. You know, because you feel like, oh, well, I'm being seen and heard in a way that I really can relate to,
right.
You know, and not have to kind of like project my experience onto stuff that's foreign to me.
That's right.
That's so that's right. What was really good. But yeah, I mean, I was like trying to think back of like things we were auditioning for. Again, you know, like in the 90s, we would have to go for like the sort of non-traditional casting.
Right.
Or what other Asian projects were there? There was like...
Well, I mean, I think the real breakthrough at the time was Sandra doing Grey's Anatomy.
Right.
Right, Sandra Oh. Mm-hmm. Because it was a part... She just was a girl. She was a girl that wanted to be a doctor. Right. But right before that, it was Lost, do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
And yet, they were all speaking, what, Korean?
Yeah.
Daniel Dae Kim and Sunjin. Yeah. I forgot her name.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a second. Everybody else is speaking English. Why are the Asian people speaking, you know, whatever language they think they're supposed to be speaking?
I actually really love that because then it was like, then it was really like I was watching my family. Because of that kind of distancing thing of like when, for in my family, it was like people speak Korean when they're being romantic or they're fighting. So it was like really appropriate for me to like listen in on their conversations in Korean because it was like, oh, they did both. They were being romantic and they're fighting. So it was like, to me, it felt very homey.
Because that was so intimate.
It was so intimate that it's like, oh, I can't believe they're letting white people hear them. You know, that's like, you would never let white people hear that part. So that to me seemed very legitimate. I think that, so that was a big breakthrough. Lost with Daniel. And that was a very, very big breakthrough. But then before
and
that.
And then Lucy Liu on.
Oh, yeah. The Charlie's Angels.
No.
And Ally McBeal.
Ally McBeal, yeah.
I love Lucy Liu.
Yeah.
She's super cool. She was kind of like the lone, you know, the only one for a while. Like there was like, because after us, you know, I just went and did stand up. And then there was like Lucy Liu in Charlie's Angels and Ally McBeal.
Right.
And then, oh, she's in Chicago too.
Was she in Chicago?
She's in Chicago. She's in, she's like one of the heiresses. She's in that, I think, like one of the fight sequences and she shoots her husband or something like that. Like, but she's really cool.
I don't remember
She's a small part in Chicago. I remember she hosted SNL. But yeah, like, I can't even remember like the parts that I was going out for. I was trying to think of like, anything that J-Lo probably was up for, I would try to get into. I would try to get an audition for. Except for Selena, of course. But, you know, like, most of those sort of, like, ingenue that they would entertain this idea, like, we could maybe have an Asian American in there. Maybe. Right.
I think I've just washed the whole thing out of my brain. I'm like, what parts did I go? You know, I was up for, like, The Last Emperor.
Ooh.
You know, things like that.
Like the either Joan Chen or the other part. The Maggie.
I've forgotten her name. I don't remember anything anymore.
She's like the opium lesbian.
Yes, right.
In Last Emperor. That's a great movie. Yeah. Did you meet Bertolucci?
Yes.
Oh, was he cool?
Yes, I met him at the Chateau Marmont.
Wow.
Yeah, what a meeting. And I had just seen Last Tango again.
That's a great movie, yeah.
And I had heard Brando being interviewed about how he never wanted to be that revealing on film again.
Mm-hmm.
And that he had actually had this huge breakdown in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat down, you know, I was a little bit of a rabble rouser in those days. I guess I still am. And I sat down and I said, I always wanted to meet the man who got Brando to get to the most intimate part of himself he broke down.
Yeah.
And he looked at me like I was like speaking a foreign language. Like,
really?
Yes. I thought, huh, well, that went over really not well. You know, he just was like, oh.
That's weird.
It was kind of weird.
You would think that he would be so moved by that because here's a movie. I mean, it's like, you know, of course it's a classic and it's a really crazy movie. If you like, you know, I love it, but it's definitely, you see like Brando so broken up.
Right.
And, you know, he must have been so influential to break Brando up like that.
Maybe. Maybe he didn't have anything to do with it, but he just felt so raw in that movie. And I just remember that interview that I read.
Yeah. Well, anyway. Maybe he just knew when to run the camera. Like, you know.
There you go.
Because some of that stuff, when you watch it, like, it's kind of like, does Brando even know the camera is on him? Like, because he's going into these memories about his mother.
That's right.
Being arrested and being drunk and all that stuff. And I don't know why Maria Schneider stays in that apartment, too. She's so mean to her.
I know.
He's just really...
Women will deal with anything, won't
I know.
They?
I definitely will, too. But, I mean, he's hot in it. I mean, this is like Brando before The Island.
Yes, exactly.
So he's definitely super hot
in
it. I mean, it was his last gasp of his, like, hotness.
Yeah.
He's probably, like, in his 50s.
Yeah, probably.
Something like that. And he's, you know, got that like camel hair coat. And then Maria Schneider looks great because, you know, she's just so, she's so fresh. And she's got like the Afghan coat and she's very like 70s Paris.
Yeah, that hair.
Yeah, and all the pubes.
The pubes.
Like so much pubes. Pubes and butter and pubes. That movie.
But when you saw it originally, you didn't think pubes, did you?
No, because everybody had pubes like that. Yeah, so it was kind of like, well, you know, it wasn't that extraordinary. But now, then I think I saw it like for the, as an adult seeing it like in the 90s.
And you're thinking, oh,
I'm like, oh my God, look at those pubes. Because everybody was getting the landing strip in the 90s. And then, yeah, the pubes were like crazy.
that's what the hippies did.
They did it. But yeah, that, I mean, but that's cool that you got it. I mean, you would have been great in that. You would have been great in The Last Emperor.
And I don't know why I didn't get it.
You should have gotten it.
I know. So, you know, that's the way it goes.
Joan Chen is definitely, in that movie, is very different because she kind of goes through it. Like, she's, you know, the sort of princess, and then she's, like, a very, like, opiate-addicted,
right,
you know, crazy after that. Was that what opium does? I guess it makes you crazy at the end? I don't know.
I think it does.
Yeah.
And you're very addicted to it. Although my uncle... when he wasn't really my uncle, it was my mother's boyfriend. It was during the 70s when everybody was doing drugs, or 80s. And he said to me, if you ever see some opium around, get me some.
Oh.
And I'd be like, really?
Yeah.
And he says, yeah, it's really good.
I think you can make it, if you go early enough to the flower market, you can go and you can buy
some poppies and bulbs. Squeeze them.
Yeah, but I think it's just, you've got to go like really, really early. I could never get up early enough to do it. And it's a lot of like, you have to like slice it and then boil it and it's poisonous, but you know, you can, you,
how
you
do
have
you
to
know all of this?
Well, I there's a side of me that's very experienced with drugs. And so, you know, it was kind of like appealing to my Martha Stewart side to like go to the flower market and maybe get opium there.
And make your own.
I had it once at a rock festival, opium.
Which one?
It was Bonnaroo.
Uh-oh.
And I saw opium there and some people had made it. And yeah, it was very good. It was very good. But it was like, it's so hard to procure and it's such a specialty.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you would never really be able to get it anywhere.
Time intensive if you have to make your own.
If you have to make your own, you know, it's like, I think it requires the same skill as like if you've ever made your own yogurt. You could make your own opium.
You need the mother load for the yogurt.
Like you need the mother. You need the mother. You need some sourdough starter. It's like a whole. It's a whole thing. But I think, yeah.
But what were we talking about before that? You were saying about
well, like parts that we had like gone out for.
But those parts are far and few between, especially mm-hmm. in those days.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was never really the typical little China doll.
Well, I mean, it's like, are any of us? No, I don't know if any of us ever really are. It's like, who was? Maybe Lucy Liu in a sense, but she sort of did her own thing too.
Yeah, I mean, I think
maybe it Nancy Kwan.
Yeah, Nancy.
Nancy Kwan.
Joan.
Yeah, Joan Chen for sure. Joan Chen also took her own path as well.
Later, but in the beginning, that's how they saw her.
That's how they saw her. I mean, and then, but yeah, I really think about Nancy Kwan a lot and how did she fit in? Like, you know, she was able to do so much with so little with the time.
Right.
The time period was so strange.
But she did Flower Drum Song, which just put her on the map, you
true.
Know. And France Nguyen, who was
France is great.
From Here to Eternity.
And Sai Chin.
Sai,
who was on our show.
Was she on our show?
She was on our show when we had, that. I feel like we had...
we had everybody on our show.
We had everybody at some point. But Sai was, she played a part, it was Terry Hughes was directing, I remember that.
Right.
And it was one where we sort of had extended family on. So we had a whole bunch of Asians on one time.
Oh, wow. I do remember that.
She was in there.
I don't remember Sai being in that, but...
She's also really great too. She's in Blow Up.
Is she in Blow Up?
The Antonioni movie.
Oh my God, I have to see that again. Yeah. I love that movie.
That's a great movie.
Oh, great
that's a
movie.
Great one just to watch.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
The spectacle.
Do you watch movies like by yourself, like at home, like
I
old
do.
Movies?
Yeah. Now everything's streaming. So when I can find something streaming and I don't have to pay, I'm like, oh my God, I get it. Gotta watch this. And like I just watched Bob Carroll, Ted and Alice the other day.
Oh yeah, Paul Mazursky.
Yeah, I went to fat camp with him one time.
You did?
Well, he had cancer and I was just fat. So we just went to, like it was a place where you went and you dealt with your problems so they would like starve you. So he was there dealing with his cancer, and I was there, and we didn't eat anything for a week, but, you know, I really, you know, I got to spend time with him. But that's a good movie.
He's a fun guy. I did The Pickle with him.
Oh, yeah.
One of
yeah.
his last movies with Danny Aiello. Mm-hmm. And he gave me the job in the room.
Yeah.
It's only happened to me twice mm-hmm. where I've gone in, done a read. I mean, now you never even see a director, right? You're just right. doing it on camera. And you're lucky you even have a casting director there. Oh, God, the old days. I really like it when you meet
I like meeting the director. I know. It's fun. Yeah.
Not like after they see your tape, but like in the moment.
It's
like,
great.
Here you are.
I love it.
And he just was like, you're great. You've got the part. I was like, really? And he was like, yeah, you have the part. But he was a really special man.
He was a great director.
And the movie was called Pickle, and I was supposed to show up at Danny's hotel room, and he's having a fight with his girlfriend or whatever, and they were throwing food from the table at him, right? Mm-hmm. And I knock on the door. He opens the door, and a pickle hits me straight in the head by accident.
Yeah.
And Paul thought that was the funniest thing he'd ever seen, and he was like, we're using that shot.
Oh,
because it was the pickle.
I love it. Well, you're the pickle. You're the best. Now, where's your socials and how can people vote for you if you're in the union?
A social. XO Jody Long on Twitter mm-hmm. and also on Instagram. Same handle. They can go to membershipfirst.com.
Perfect.
And as you can see, you know, I'm not just running for National Secretary Treasurer, but National Board, et cetera, because you never know what's going to happen, right? But we have an incredible list of endorsers. I think you're on the back of that,
yes.
too.
Yes. Oh, great.
Yeah.
I endorse you. You're endorsed by a lot of people and endorsed by Awkwafina, and you're also endorsed by me.
Yes.
So people, please vote. If you're in the union, vote for Jody. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to, like, hang out with you.
I know. I love you.
For a little bit
it's
here.
It's good to see you.
It's so good to see you.
Thank you, Jody.
Never miss an episode of The Margaret Show. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The Margaret Show is an Erios production with editing by Kat Hong and original music by Garrison Starr.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.